No. He wipes his arse with snow and pulls up his trousers. He considers me and nods in approval. You come from no one. I too come from no one. Then he turns and stumbles back to the fire. The Queen knows about you and Freyhild, I say. He wheels back and with one step closes the distance. I have to step back to look into his eyes. It's not my business what you do with your cock, but at least have the decency not to undress Freyhild with your eyes, like a titanium-hard teenager. Your queen doesn't seem the forgiving kind, and others notice, even if they're too afraid of you to say it. I slip past him and leave him to his dung. Chapter 45. Ephraim. Night gaze. The obsidians arrange themselves in a crescent and groan a song of farewell to the last sliver of sun as it dips beneath the horizon, not to be seen again until summer. It has a faintly tragic quality, this send-off. The dark months of winter are a reality the obsidians have left behind. While Olympia undergoes repairs, they will return to their cities and high-rise penthouses and skyhook bars and brothels in the cities of Cimmeria, leaving only the sparse remnants of savage clans to suffer the season. Sephi gives us a blessing before we go, dipping her finger in blood and pressing it to my forehead, then Osgard's. When she comes to Freyhild, her jaw locks, and she presses hard enough with her nail to leave a small gash. I wave dramatically at Pax as the snowball takes off to the clamour of drums and horns, the skull of the dragon dragging behind on a tow cable. As I fly, Freyhild looks joyfully ahead while Osgard plays with his jewelled rings. Half an hour's flight finds us beside the ruins of the Valkyrie spires. We drop the skull by the site Osgard and his acolytes have prepared for the Godspeaker to rise. We set down south of it and hike up. We raise our thermal tent while Osgard and Freyhild douse the skull and timber with dragon fat and lay out a circle of scales etched with runes. Soon, fire leaps along the skull and the pine beneath. Freyhild and I sip heated grog to ward off the chill as Osgard finishes laying his runes. She looked so young in the firelight I can barely remember thinking her a savage. She catches me watching her finger the small scratch Sephi gave her. "I saw you and Valdir speaking in the shadow," she says. "He returned haunted. Did you give him some grey wisdom?" Nothing he doesn't already know. The fire crackles between us. She knows I know. "I have tried to end it before. It is a war in here." She opens her hand over her heart. "Sephi gave me purpose. Valdir, everything else." She looks out at the snow. "She is stubborn. She is the strength in the bond. She must release him, but she will not. I do not know what to do." "Yeah. Yeah," she mocks. "No funny joke, no cruel cuts, just yeah." I rub my hands together, trying to soak up the warmth of the fire. "I don't know what you want me to say. It is what it is. Maybe she loves him too, I don't know. But you know it ain't just between you and Sephi and Valdir. How many others have found out?" Her jaw clenches. "Take that number and triple it. Hell, multiply it by 10. Gossip like that. Exponential echoes." I sigh, knowing I should mind my own business. But I care about this weird assassin, and I guess I care about Sephi. "Seriously, what's Sephi supposed to do? Have you killed?" "No, that is dishonorable. My queen is honorable. She would challenge me. Out here, I would win. In a circle? No. Lucky for you, she's forbidden challenges, remember? Her new path? All tribe? No kill all tribe? Anyway, do you want to kill your queen?
No,
she snaps.
She is all.
The face goes blank. Maybe she will find another mate. And what does that tell the others? You saw her fail to draw that bow. Others did too. Some will buy the pack's bit, but not all. Are you trying to be queen? She reels back, offended.
No.
Well, maybe you make that clear to everyone, especially Seffi. Right now, she's being the big girl. You're spitting in her eye. She might have the throne, but you're the only one who can fix this. She weaves a dragon tooth into her valor tail. I have never feared the enemy. But speaking to Seffi, her expression becomes tragic. Valdir is my heart. I do not want it to be so, but he is. When I wake, when I sleep, he is a warm shadow that goes with me always. Well, kid, it's on you. I'd like to say there's another shadow or whatever out there for you, but I found mine, and he's stuck with me. But some things are more important, she says. I stare into the fire. Maybe. All tribe is more important than me. I know what I must do. She claps my shoulder, hard enough to rattle my teeth. Like I said, grey wisdom. She grows dour, sinking into the weight of her decision. Restless from all the thinking, she stands up and tells Osgard she will find the Night Gaze, and he can warm his old bones by the fire, and maybe learn something from the grey. The old shaman wheezes as he sits down.
What did you say to her?
Oh, just being wise, you know, like a fox. I tighten my jacket, feeling chilled under the gaze of the hollow towers. They hunch together, lording over the scattered stone and shadow, the many empty doors and windows like so many eye sockets. Once this was home to Seffi the Quiet, Ragnar the God. Now only wind moves in the dead city.
Do you hear them?
Osgard cocks his head to the wind.
Not all the people of Alia had heart to follow Seffi to the stars. Those who remained fell to the wrath of gold. Their spirits are trapped in the stone, shamed for all time.
Poor sods, he snorts.
If it were true, yes.
I'll be damned. Is that skepticism I hear from a shaman? Osgard shrugs and prods the crumbling pine of the fire with a distant look. His mood is different than amongst his people, less frivolous. I shift closer to the flames. So, what now?
We drink until Freyhild returns with Nightgaze. The gods must be offered strength of the beast and beauty of the land to speak.
He sounds bored. Right. He sighs and looks at the darkness creeping around us.
I confess, I hope she does not hurry. It is good to be alone in the snow.
Thought you liked Freyhild. He chuckles.
Freyhild is clever woman, but she is blind. Not like us.
How's that?
The more blessed the creature, the less they question life. She is like Valdir and his big muscles this way. Blindly forward with purpose. Guided by the trough of expectation.
Osgard plays with his rings.
But us, that which is thin to us is thick to others. Dull to us, resplendent to fools. I envy the blind. To accept mystery. To witness a corpse and think Valhalla instead of maggot. Did you know I was born to a woman of power? You would not think it. Brood of a great queen, destined to fight the gods' battles in the stars. But I was cursed for my mother's impiety, so our shaman said.
He brandishes his twisted hand.
Amniotic band syndrome. Agony. bred out of the other races, but not ours. My fingers were never formed. My spirit berries dull the pain.
Well, why not just get an upgrade? I pat my new leg. He turns the twisted hand.
Many of the braids believe it is the root of my power. At 4, my mother found me amputating my own hand with a fish knife to stop the pain. They said a dark spirit was within me. Fools. Shaman pressed coals into the soles of my feet and I was given to the ice. No Valhalla for a cursed child. They now say spirits found me, raised me with their arts, that I sacrificed my hand to Mimir for a drink from her well of wisdom.
He spits into the coals in disgust.
Cruelty is the heart of myth. There was no Mimir. I could not walk for the wounds, so I crawled, dragged my child's body with one hand until my fingers blackened. No spirit came, no gods. It was the kindness of a no-man that saved me, a shamed man cast out from his own people who lived as a hermit in the mountains. He became my father, my mother, but his life was withering. Hepatocellular carcinoma, I believe. Soon, I would be a boy alone on the ice, so he gave me all he could to survive when he left. Omens, prophecies, tricks. He taught me religion is a lever, with a slight force at a clever angle, immense power to shift tides of humanity. When his Andi returned to the All-Mother, I gave his flesh to sky and bones to ice, and went to find a people.
He passes me a horn of grog. I take a generous swig, then another, and scoot closer to the fire. Intrigued and a little mystified, he's letting me see beneath the mask. Risky business, that.
The first tribe found value in my father's tricks. I was clever, but reckless and cruel. Their shaman had a trick in wooing ice serpents. He would light a fire of bitter nettle to make them sleepy. I changed the nettle for a mang root. I declared him a falsifier. When his snakes killed him before his queen, I became their shaman. Soon, they were conquered, and I became shaman to that tribe and the next. To survive, I replaced other clever men. I used the lever. I learned to say what queens want to hear. In time, I learned to say what queens need to hear. And when I came upon the shaman who put coals to my feet, having left my mother after her tribe was conquered, I fed his manhood and liver to him and burned his body on the tundra. But I despaired. I felt no joy. The river of blood flowed and flowed, tribe fighting tribe. Queen fighting queen, shaman unseating shaman, we were cannibals. When Sefi and Tyr Morga slew our gods, I saw a queen who could tame the darkness inside us.
He grows quiet and watches the stars. That's some story. He glares.
You doubt me?
Well, you're not exactly Victra, how I cannot tell a lie. He grins.
And what can bond sinners but their sins? None of my people would understand. Secrets are weight.
I'll drink to that. I take down another gulp and pass the horn. Oh, quite a pair, eh? 2 con men just trying to stay above water. Was wondering if you'd ever drop the mask. He laughs and drinks deep. Was the old tribe her idea or yours?
Mine. Sowed over years. Too long she listened to Xenophon, thinking gold wisdom wisest, and to Valdir, guide of her heart, a stone brain who worships the Reaper because he is a master of violence. Were it not for the cost of the Mercurian reign, a fool could never have made a kingdom. You listen too much to others. I am not a fool.
No, you really aren't, are you? Fair's fair. What are you, then? He chooses carefully.
Liar. That is what I truly am.
The sigh of a man disappointed in himself eases out of him.
A liar who lied because he did not want to die, because he did not want to live in the ice without a people. Is that a sin?
He sits in penitence and stirs the coals, searching for something.
I know you laugh at Firebones. Others see you fall in mine victory and think you blessed. But we know how lucky you were to live. All my life, I looked in Firebones and saw nothing. Nothing but my own spirit growing darker and gods more distant. Not once did they answer me. My father said they weren't real, only the chains of our masters.
He grasps his chest.
But inside this heart, a coal burned, wanting them to be real, something to be real. This world is so cold, you know.
Freyhild knows. It's why she fears to lose Valdir. And I know. I know all too well. He reaches into the fire to take a coal brighter than the rest. The stink of burning skin fills the air.
I do not know if the gods are real. But something, someone spoke to me. And the coal, long dormant, ignited. It was on Mercury. Using the bones of our braves fallen in the rain, I saw a griffin in the flames, winged and stained red, red as the eyes of a hell diver. And the grey smoke that formed above the griffin took the shape of a fox, one old and cunning, but held back by thorns of darkness.
He looks up at me, the reflection of the coal burning in his eyes.
Fear became me. After so long, so long my gods had spoken, but I feared knowing their origin, feared my own doubt. And then I saw you on Luna, and I knew our path, your path, and my queen set sail for Mars. It is our destiny to be here, yours, mine, Cephis.
The fire crackles. In the dark, wind whistles through the ruins. You want to know what insanity is? I pulled out a gold 10-credit piece. I wave my hand over it and it disappears. I pull it from behind his ear and feign awe. Fall in for your own con. You weren't seeing the gods. You were high, old boy. He takes no offense.
There is a world to be seen through God's breath. It is a real world. Vibrations, energy, fear, exaltation. But all that is in serotonin. Prefrontal cortex, easily manipulated. Xenophon has told my queen this many times. But my queen knows something Xenophon does not.
His bones creak as he leans forward.
I took no God's breath that day.
He puts the red-hot coal in his mouth. Then he seizes my hand and spits the coal into my palm. I almost drop it, but he holds my hand closed. The coal is cool as snow. I've never seen that trick before.
I know tricks. More tricks than you.
I turn the coal over in my hands. It glows with light.
What I have seen was no trick. Fire and ash will come, and end of worlds. Serpent will strangle wolf. Lion will battle lion. Darkness will battle light. Sister murder brother. Son murder father. Father murder daughter. This is what the fire told me. All I have seen has come true. As others are consumed, Cephi will rise from the ashes to bind the obsidians, to become one with Red, to found a kingdom watched over by a grey fox. Watched over by you.
An uncomfortable silence grows between us. There's a lot of greys in the world, old boy. This one's just passing through. I get my girl and I'm gone. He shakes his head.
You have your games, I had mine. But a man must someday stand his ground, or he is no man. Soon, when Volga is returned, you will have a choice to abandon us or to stay. I know you will choose to be a man. You are here to watch over Sefi. It is your destiny, and we are your tribe.
We finish the rest of the grog in silence. Bored of waiting for Freyhild, Osgard retires to our tent and tells me to wake him when she returns. I remain at the campfire as it dwindles, listening to him snore and creatures howl in the shrouded mountains. Osgard is a liar, a fraud, a charlatan running on thin ice. We are too alike to ever trust each other, but also too alike to miss the chance to try. I envy him now. He's found a cause. Where's mine? Save Volga, then what? Abandon my contract? Carve out a life on the run? Could I really stay? Freyhild is taking forever, and the fire is doing little to keep me warm. Remembering I have another coat in the ship, I head back. In the darkness, I lose my way and wind up along a scree of rubble from a fallen tower. My hand light illuminates a rock carved with griffins. The gold orbital strikes from a decade ago melted most of the carvings away. It's not right. The wings are unique to each griffin. Someone took care to carve this. And then, with a push of a button, a drone of a human wiped it all away. A faint silver glint in the rocks distracts me from my melancholy. I climb up and shine my light on it, thinking it might be some relic or a star shell fragment. It's neither. I almost laugh at my dumb fortune. How could Freyhild miss this? It stretches in the darkness all the way to the base of a pale tree set against a jagged obelisk. A few minutes later, I retired to our camp. I stir Osgard gently from his sleep. He wakes with a snort, clutching a dagger under his furs with his good hand. You want to see some magic, shaman? He grins.
Always.
We retrace my Osgard's path through the rubble and climb the pillar. The silver light washes Osgard's face of its creases. As he witnesses the field of night gaze amongst the ruins, his expression becomes that of a child jumping into a public fountain on a hot day. The flowers are like pools of liquid silver. Osgard's thick hands stroke the petals with tender care. They curl around his dark fingers. A great laugh escapes him, and he walks in rapture, following the veins of flowers that skin the rubble and leaning towers in mutinous silver light. He glances back at me.
Thank you for this gift. It will never be forgotten.
I'm about to reply when a sub-program in my brain flickers a warning. Something's changed. Osgard senses the tension and frowns as I walk past him to the shattered obelisk I spotted earlier.
What is wrong?
He whispers. There was a tree here. Osgard comes to my side and squints at the obelisk. It's a fractured piece of a throne. A broken wing is all that remains of one of the armrests.
This was the throne of Alia,
Osgard whispers.
Sefi's mother.
He leans to pick something from it. Several dark stones roll in his palm. They're shaped like humans, but wrong. Their phalluses are engorged, their craniums far too large and studded with spikes. Osgard, don't react. We've got company. I motion down with my eyes. In a silvery pool of crushed nightgaze blossoms lies a single boot print. Next to it, my boot looks no larger than a red child's. Osgard drops the dark stones. I lift my hand as if to scratch my head, brushing off my pistol's safety and activating my earcom. Static washes. We're being jammed. The wind whispers through the dead city. Someone is out there. Osgard, I want you to stay on my six. When I give the word, we go as fast as we can back to the ship. Stick together. He nods. Now! Fear claws into my chest as we sprint back the way we came. It's unexplainable, total, like the shrieking of cat claws on a window pane. We race under the looming towers. Silver pollen sprays around us as our boots turn night gaze petals to pulp. Then Osgard stops. I wheel around, hissing at him to keep running. Coated in silver pollen, he looks like a skeleton made of mercury as he stares at something. I rush back to him and find him looking through the open face of a fallen tower. Inside, illuminated by the phosphorescent flowers, a body, pierced by three huge arrows, hangs off the ground like a fish on a line. A rusted iron hook punctures the neck, loops through the jaw and protrudes out between shattered teeth. As the body sways on the chain, its face turns to us, lower jaw hanging broken and unhinged. It is Freyhild. Then I smell the stink of breath, feel heat on the back of my neck. I stick my gun under my left armpit and pull the trigger. The gun explodes in my hand as the barrel is crumpled shut by a huge hand. My index finger twists like kindling as I try to tear it free of the mangled gun. Osgard, run! I try to follow my own advice, but three dark shapes fall to block my path. I fall to a knee in case they fire, then strip a thermal flare from my belt and toss it, hoping they're wearing optics. I roll right, turn a corner, the thermal ignites. A rippling tide of inky black rolls through the night gaze veins as the delicate petals are exposed to the high-frequency light waves. I turn into a dead end of rubble. There's a soft thump behind me. I turn around and find myself staring eye to eye with two pits of darkness. They are set within the giant head of a pale nightmare, and it is crouching. When the nightmare uncoils from its crouch, my eyes are no higher than the melted face of an old tattoo obscured behind its white chest hair. The obsidian is big, bigger than Valdir, bigger than any man I have ever seen. Metal mingles with the pale flesh of his arms and pectorals, and ribs his trachea. His huge mouth is a blood-smeared maw, and the language that seeps sluggishly from it is alien to my ears. Ginjik kel gini nag ho ai nud kajek nin ji jig ve. I tried to step back. A hand as large as my head seizes me and strokes my cheek with its thumb. A metal nail, sharp enough to fillet bone, traces paths along my cheek, gently, almost affectionately. Shh! The thermal flare goes out, darkness again. The giant forces my right hand open and puts something heavy and hot in it. Warm fluid drips between my fingers, the iron smell of raw meat. Stay. The giant flows past me to stand in front of a witless Osgard, who has been dragged to us by several tall shadows. We have heard your prophecy, shaman. The giant laughs at Osgard's wilted arm. Who is a mongrel to speak for the god? The All-Father speaks one truth. And that is might. Osgard comes alive with a wild screech, jerks his knife toward the giant's ribs. The giant catches the hand and squeezes it against the knife hilt until Osgard shrieks and there's a wet, crumpling sound. You like prophecies, shaman? Here is my prophecy. The giant presses a metal-nailed thumb into Osgard's right eye, and submerges it to the knuckle. Screams bubble out of Osgar's mouth as his eyeball collapses and dark fluid leaks down his face. When next you behold me, you will take the other. The pale giant laughs. Only blinded do liars finally see. He tosses Osgar to the ground, as a spoiled child discards an old toy. My friend paws at his mangled eye with his broken hand. My own shake around the warm mass they hold. I've seen war, but never felt this afraid. The obsidian gestures to my hands as ship lights carve the darkness. It is a heart that's been gnawed upon. Freyhild's heart. I feel the bile rising. The Skoogie was worthy. The giant bears a narrow scratch on his neck. I have honored her strength. It is part of me now. Gift her heart to your Lyre Queen. Tell her I have heard in the ink she is queen of all Volk. I have come to contest her claim. Tell her she is now prey. The ship lights silhouette the monster. The shape of a man barred with metal eclipses me. Who are you? I call after him as he walks to his ship. Laughter corrupts the darkness around us. The giant smiles as the darkness answers for him with a long groan made of a single distended syllable. Bah. Chapter 46. Ephraim. Whirlpool. The Ascomani are real, and so is their king. It's all I can think about as a whirlpool of carrion eaters churns over the body of Freyhild. On the shoulder of the very mountain where she was born, the host of obsidians watches in silence. Only the light of braziers holds back the winter night. When the last bit of flesh has been stripped away, the great host melts into the gloom back to their ships. They are solemn. Freyhild was much loved, and this was a bad death. One by one, the Skoogie drop strands of hair onto her bones and whisper something to her they never said to her in life. They invite me to do the same. When it's my turn, I look at the grisly remains and see Volga. I can't shake the feeling this is my fault, instead of that of barbarians from deep space. How ridiculous that sounds. Only hours ago, Freyhild was so full of life, so in love with her tribe, her queen, Valdir. How can I keep Volga from this fate, when horror seems to follow me everywhere I go? I wish I could have seen you grow old, I say, and sprinkle several hairs over her bones. You would have been a sight. My chest tightens as I leave her to her last mourner. Seffi watches from the distance as Valdir collects her bones to sew them together with the hair given by her mourners. Afterwards, he will hide her bones away in the high mountain tombs of her kin. The bones clack like wet wood behind me. Then an inhuman shriek comes from the man. I glance back to see his great shoulders convulsing as he saws off his hair, the great valor tail that no gold could shear, and with it ties together the bones of his lover. Seffi flies away. A feast is thrown in Freyhild's honour in Seffi's newly appointed Griffin Hall. It's a dour, ugly little affair held under the stupid faces of griffins carved by Olympian artisans. More than anything, the obsidians are confused by my tale. They knew the outcast tribes of Mars and Earth were pirates. Like the Republic, they call them Ascomani after the old legends. But no, they must take my word and Osgar's that the myth is true. That there's another breed out there. That Volsungfar is as real as a heart attack. It's a tough pill to swallow, especially to Valdir and his male warriors. They liked Freyhild. They don't like me. And they like Osgard even less. How convenient it is for us to blame her death on myths from deep space. I sit amongst the Skugi at a low table in silence, nursing a cup of hard liquor. Goodkind is missing. Seffi selected him and several other pathfinders to assess the scene and check the story Osgard and I gave her. At the high table with Seffi, the children, and the highest-ranking female jarls, the tribal leaders, Valdir drowns his agony in endless horns of Azag. His rage ferments like the berry liquor that stains his lips purple. Not even the old rough bastards with the long valor tails dare speak to him. He stares across Seffi to Osgard, the only other man at the high table. The shaman, his eye patched, his hand in a cast, withers under that hard gaze. Neither man listens to the braves who stand one by one to toast Freyhild's memory with trite little expressions of respect. Deft in all things but not dying, it seems. Some deaths make all feel terribly mortal. Xenophon, who stands by the cupbearers of the high table, seems unimpressed by the funeral toasts as I am. The white spares me a grim nod. Of Seffi's council, the Logos wasn't the only one skeptical about the tale of Ascomani, but he was the most vocal. From the far end of the table, Pax watches Valdir with narrowed eyes. Seffi stands and lifts her horn. Freyhild was born in bondage, but made herself free. Her worth, if weighed, would make a mountain light as air. She drinks now beside Ragnar and feasts in the halls of Valhalla. I swear on my brother's blood, the creature known as Volsungfar will hang upon Griffinhold by his entrails. His skin will be fed to mice, his heart to fish, his balls to dogs. He and his Ascomani are no men. I declare Ashvar upon them. Forevermore they stand enemy of all tribe. Skål! The room grumbles. She sits, and as Xenophon brings her a message, she fails to see the choleric rage corrupting Valdir's face. Lies! The champion mouths. He stands, draws his axe, and slams it through the table, breaking it nearly in half. Cups of spirits and plates of meat tumble to the floor. Seffi's jaw flexes as to the horror of the host. He repeats his accusation. Lies! He whispers something to Valdir and reaches for his shoulder. He rips away from her. Ascomani! He spits on the broken table. Ascomani are scavengers, flea-bitten raiders too weak for our warbands. They have no king. There is no Volsungfar. He thrusts a finger at Osgard. You spun him from rumour, like you spin all your shit. He flings a hand at Xenophon. The white does not believe your lie. When has the white been wrong? Seffi remains seated and turns to look out at the host instead of her fuming mate. Maybe she thinks if she ignores him, she can let this insult slide and that Valdir will not go too far in his accusations. Big fool just might. I saw the tracks myself. I saw no hunt signs, no traces of evil obsidian from the dark. Freyhild would never be taken unaware, even by myths. She is not blind. He looks at Seffi, then back to the shaman. She was shot from the front by a bow at no more than 20 paces? How would Freyhild, Skugi, Mindtaker, Drakeslayer be so stupid? How could she die when 2 weaklings did not?
Did I take my own eye?
Asgard says in protest. Odin did. What is an eye to a fool? Your only weapon is your tongue.
I saw Volsungvar, a creature from the blackness, from the edge of the ink itself. He spoke in the lost tongue. He challenged our queen. Grania saw what I saw.
Great. Thanks, old boy. Valdir nearly tips over as he turns to glare at me.
The Grey is a whore who will do anything for money. Did you pay him to lie, Asgard? To pretend it was Ascomani? Or did you, my queen?
The room goes dead quiet. If duels were allowed, any brave could call him out for challenging their honor like that. But to challenge the queen's? Shit. I don't know. She could probably just kill him here. An insult to her honor is an insult to the tribe, punishable by death. Still, she doesn't move. Valdir is the heart of the male braves. Their pride, their big brother. Gods, I feel for her.
Sefi the Quiet,
Valdir crows, stumbling as he waves his arms about.
No need to use that cold tongue. Your eyes sang your jealousy. I saw. We all saw. Did you decide to kill her because she took the mines? Or because she killed the drake? Or because she held my heart in her hands? Or because she is young and you are old?
Your cock is yours, Sefi says out to the host. Fuck a goat for all I care, but your valor is your tribe's. Do not sully it by wagging your tongue like stupid Heatlander.
You feel nothing, he hisses into her face. It is not you who's quiet. It is your auntie.
He grabs the flagon from his cupbearer and shoves his way out of the room. Pax lifts his eyebrows to me, and Electra takes the azag from the neighbouring jarl and downs the whole horn. Sefi sighs and eats the grape from a spilled dish. She waves to the open doors where light snow drifts down.
It is foul weather outside. Much thunder.
She admires the high walls and vaulted ceiling.
Stone echoes loudly, but it remains stone, strong, with no memory.
She smiles at her host, her message clear and clever.
Minstrels, drown out the thunder, please.
Many laugh as the minstrels pour into the hall, but not all. Not Valdir's cadre of male braves, not the Skugi, not me. As the minstrels sing, I feel the need for fresh air. I stand in the archway between the Bellona doors to watch snow fall on Olympia. Even in the night, the construction doesn't pause. Skyscrapers rise anew. Seems your myths have a nasty bite, I say. Familiar soft footsteps approach from the hall. Pax extends a hand out into the snow.
I told you they weren't myths. I just said they were far away.
Looks like you don't know everything. I squint over at him. You believe me, right?
I believe you think you saw Ascomani, but from your description, they seem to be built the same as our obsidians. After several hundred years, that would be unlikely.
I only saw far, clearly. The others were... It was dark and fast. I chew the inside of my cheek.
You think it might have been imposters?
I don't know. It doesn't make sense. If it is the real Volsungvar, how did he get here so fast? How did he make it to the surface? Why did he target Freyhild? The Ascomani raiders in the belt are resourceful
but none could evade the Republic's sensor grid, or the instruments of their Pandora.
Maybe he was already here, I say. Maybe he knew Seffi was coming here.
How would he know that? Pax asks.
I glance back into the hall where Osgard watches the minstrels from Seffi's side.
That is a question, isn't it?
The two servants in Seffi's favour, Osgard and I, walk away with their lives. The one screwing her concubine hangs on a hook.
Do you believe Valdir, then?
He asks.
That Osgard is complicit?
I don't have a bloody clue. All I know is that Farr is the scariest man I've ever met, and I met quite a few. In the hall, Seffi departs. Xenophon heads our way.
One question puzzles me the most, Pax says. Why would the Azkamani have any interest in the All Tribe? For 500 years, the only enemy they knew was themselves and the Moon Lords. He hesitates. And the Fear Knight.
He's prevented from saying more and takes on a thoughtful expression as Xenophon arrives.
The Queen would like a private word with both of you. Xenophon motions us to follow. I linger behind with Pax.
You and Hatshepsut wearing your harnesses, I ask.
Always.
Good lad.
In her private chamber, Seffi hunches over the fire as I tell her for the third time what I already told her underlings of our night in the ruins. Her gloved finger strokes Ajar's razor. Electra slouches by the fire, poking it with her finger. Pax remains quiet, not yet addressed.
You know humans well, Seffi says carefully to me. Did it seem to you that Osgard knew this far?
I look between her and Xenophon. Who is asking?
I am, Seffi says.
I don't think so. He looks scared shitless, but I'm not a bloodhound. She purses her lips and looks at Pax.
Do you believe Volksung Far is real?
Yes. The context of the RR debriefs my mother passed to me suggests he's a myth to the pirates, but a real figure in the Kuiper Belt. However, we have intercepted tight beams with phrases such as the Far orders or send them to the Far, followed by instructions, not just as an epigram.
She mulls this over.
You remember these messages? Verbatim. However, it could simply be they've adopted the word Far as a title. You will transcribe the message for Xenophon.
The White stands apart from us, keeping record.
Pax says he will. This Far, did your mother believe he is from the Far Inc?
According to classified society records, yes. There is a civilization there, as you know. One that has harried the Moon Lords for years. But the transit would take over a year's sail on a destroyer, and the Moon Lord sensors are at least as sophisticated as ours. They hunt down Azkamani as they do everything, thoroughly.
Seffi frowns in thought.
If he could make the transit, what size of force could he wield?
Again, that would be guesswork, Pax says. 50,000 if the raiders in the inner belt are his allies. If his real strength is in the Kuiper Belt, it would be ridiculous to even posit a guess. But even if it is a large force, the convoy required to ferry them here would have been spotted by the Moon Lords.
Maybe they sent them, Seffi hazards.
Romulus would rather die than ally with Obsidians, Pax says.
He allied with your father?
Romulus would never ally with Obsidians.
Men change?
She shrugs, probably thinking of Valdir. If Seffi arranged this to kill Freyhild, she's putting on an elaborate show.
I believe it time to consult with your mother, Electra, Seffi says.
Electra keeps prodding the fire.
Republic must think we are strong. We cannot ask them. Will she aid us if we need assistance?
It'll cost you one of us, Electra says. She'll ask for me. You'll say no. She'll block your calls until you're attacked. She'll call and ask for me again. You fear you won't have leverage if you give me. So you'll give Pax. With his parents likely dead, he means less in the macro. But it's Pax she wants, because she'll put Darrow and Virginia over herself and Dar, and because it is moral.
Well, that was brutally succinct, I mutter. She just glowers at the fire, stooped and unhappy. The door bursts open. Braga, Pax's chief bodyguard, and one of Sefi's wing sisters, stands with tears in her eyes. The stone stairs up to the griffin's eyrie are covered with feathers and dander. They're sobbing from above. Blind obsidian stable masters weep into their hands. When we arrive at the roost, we are greeted with a scene of carnage. Sefi staggers past pools of blood and half a dozen butchered stable hands toward the pale mass of her griffin. God-eater lies on the floor, her neck hacked to the bone. Her huge eyes stare wide and terrified at the ceiling as she twitches in agony. The rest of the griffins are gone. I can barely make out their silhouettes against the moonlight over Olympia as they fly toward Loch Esmeralda. The stable masters dare not approach God-eater. Her long claws rake against the stone in pain. Only when Sefi approaches with her throat bared does the beast still. Sefi strokes her muzzle and puts her head to the great sternum. With a frown from what she hears, she closes her eyes to look at the griffin's spirit. Pax watches thoughtfully as she drives her razor into God-eater's heart. Sefi breathes in the griffin's death rattle and wraps her arms around its neck before standing. Several dozen Valkyrie stand sweating beyond the dead animal. The mangled corpses of three of their sisters lie broken and hacked as if by a mindless monster. Medical teams attend three survivors. The rest part for Sefi. Valdir kneels on the stable floor amidst the straw. He's drenched head to toe in blood and covered with long gashes from the griffin's talons. Burn marks from stun weapons congeal patches of the blood. The axe he murdered God-eater and the Valkyrie with lies on the floor, covered with feathers and viscera. He pants like a dog on a hot day. Muscles twitch from residual electric shock.
"Did you love her so?" Sefi whispers.
"As much as I loved you before you became stone." His voice morphs into a mad growl, making Sefi tilt her head. "You feared she would become queen instead of your Volga. My pathfinders found skip trace back to the echo of Ragnar. At first, I thought I misheard him, until Pax and Electra glance at me, just as confused. Valdir's head twitches as he twists it around. His teeth are purple and pulled back in a primal grimace. "Do you feel anything now, Sefi?"
Sefi takes the stunfist from Baldi, one of her bodyguards, and shoots him again and again and again until he steams on the floor, flat and laughing.
Only when I call her name does Sefi pause, just short of killing him. She drops the stun fist and orders without a trace of emotion,
"Bind this creature and throw it in the deep cells."
In one of the stables, Pax crouches by a discarded flagon of Azag. "Give that ear," I say, taking over as Valdir is dragged from the room. I signal Xenophon, and several minutes later, one of his aides returns with a sample kit. We feed several drops of Azag in. When the readout comes, Xenophon's hand twitches.
"What is it?" Sefi demands.
Xenophon lets the kit go, and I bring it to Sefi. She takes it in her bloody hands, and her face grows dark with rage.
"Bring me the shaman."
"There is no proof that it was his doing," Xenophon intones.
I caution you against... Obey, servant!
20 long minutes later, I watch Osgard fall to his knees, begging for Sephi to believe he did not put the fever cloud mushroom into Valdir's Azag. The queen watches him from inside her sanctum as snow falls outside. She hasn't spoken since the Valkyrie dragged him in. Half of Griffinhold writhes in rumor, half in grief.
All I have done for you, my queen,
Osgard begs, and I believe he thinks as much. Valdir was always a threat to him, a skeptic of his prophecies, a man who held sway over Sephi's heart in a way he never could. I know the type. In his story to me on the ice, he seemed tragic and noble in his lies. But now the underbelly of that self-myth reveals the reptile. He finally saw his chance to end a competitor, a man he could never challenge, who mocked him daily, and he took it. Still, he bleats on. When even he runs out of words, Sephi finally looks at him.
You brought us to Mars, Osgard. You helped me believe in the All Tribe and make my brother's dream. For that, I am in your debt. Your prophecy is the Andi of the tribe now. I will not sully it. But this is the last time I speak to you. For good of tribe, you will live amongst us, but you are a shadow to be seen, never heeded, never heard, never noticed. Be gone.
The shaman knows better than to call her bluff. Broken, he looks at me. Yeah, right, old boy, you're on your own. He stands and shuffles towards the door.
Osgard?
He stops and turns to his queen in hope.
I will find the truth. If this far is known to you, there will be no mercy.
The Valkyries shove him out. Of the four in Sephi's council when first she hired me, only the human calculator remains. This fact almost makes me hold my tongue. Almost. Why would Volga be queen? I ask. Sephi nods, expecting the question. She gestures to the hearth and calls for the servant to bring wine. I don't join her in sitting. She watches Amel's replacement open the bottle and pour the wine. Xenophon samples it, nods, and returns to his perch behind her shoulder. She drinks heavily and gestures for me to join her. I don't think I'll be drinking anything around here anytime soon. Why would Volga be queen? What was Valdir growling about? She twirls the wine with her gloved hand. Xenophon pipes up. Your Majesty knows I was hesitant with regard to the hiring of Mr. Horn. I believe he has contradicted my assessment. More than ever, he is of value to the All Tribe. Show him or you will lose him. A shadow of herself, Sephi listens to her white. She takes off her coat, then her vest underneath, and rolls up her right sleeve and removes her glove and a thin layer of a medical wrap. The limb smells of rotting meat. I recoil. What is that?
Yellow death, she replies.
Her skin is sulfur yellow and hideous. Mottled scales climb from her elbow down to her hand. Raw fissures crack the skin and whine through the patches to weep murky pus. Where she would have held her griffin's reins, a strip of raw skin shows where the scales sheathed off. Fresh scales are already pushing their way to the surface. She winces as she moves the hand.
A gift from Atalantia, she says. It is a designer poison. It corrupts the DNA itself, I am told. It cannot be contained by removing the arm. If the arm is removed, it moves to find another region of the body.
She rolls her hand around to inspect it.
It has not conquered me yet, despite what Valdir thinks. It disgusts him as it should. That is why I let him lie with Freyhild. It is why I grow cold to him. What it touches, it infects.
And it's why you couldn't draw the bow.
At times I grow weak until the pain passes. For all the medici and scientists, it is only Xenophon who slows it. But I was foolish. I did not take his medicine on the hunt. Old creed.
She grimaces.
It cannot be stopped by any means we possess, or all our helium can buy.
When?
Several years still, Xenophon says. Her Majesty is strength.
Seffi grimaces at that and tries to wrap the medical bandage back around, but fumbles. Tenderly, Xenophon kneels and helps her, taking care not to touch her skin. Gently, the white fits her glove back on and rolls down her sleeve. She smiles absently at the loyal servant in gratitude.
In my time, I did what no one has done. I have united the tribes of all ice.
She snorts.
Most ice, at least. But they have not forgotten their old feuds or the old creed. When I die, Valdir would lead them to more of Tir Morgul's wars. Only one thing can bind them, maybe in peace. The blood of Ragnar. I am not the last to carry it. Volga is Ragnar's daughter.
I feel hit by train. No. She was born on Luna. She was an experiment, a tube baby.
In a breeding stable run by the family Grimace, the owners of my brother, my father, his father before him. My father, Wagner the Pale Horse, was their prized stud. He begat scores of spawn. When he coupled with my mother to make their brood, he had long been in the stars. It was his privilege to return to the ice on the condition he make more slaves. In time, he'd made enough. He took my brother and me hunting one last time before the gods called him back. I never saw him again. When they took Ragnar, she shakes her head, they found a more practical method, a way to make as many spawn as they desired and keep him at their wars.
How many?
200 from his seed. We thought all died when the jackal's atomics destroyed the facility. But when the Julii captured Volga, she ran her DNA. Who else knows? Valdir, Osgard, and Xenophon. This is second reason why I push toward modern age. So when I die, Volga will not be seen as abomination goals made, but queen. I heeded Xenophon's warnings. Truly, I feared Osgard's ambition to seize the mines. 'Tis too much to risk to make a kingdom for a prophecy, when I knew it would shatter at my death. My DNA is corrupt. It would transfer to any kin. But with a living heir, with Ragnar's blood.
You were going to use her. So much for her benevolence, for giving her back to me. I wasn't earning Volga's freedom. Seffi was going to keep her all along. We're all pieces on a board to her.
I am going to give her a kingdom. My brother's blood will fulfill our dream for our people.
And you wanted me to be a spokesman, to vouch for you, I say, backing away from her. That's why you bought me with a ship, took me on the hunt, had Osgard pour honey in my ear, not for me, but because you needed me to recruit her, to drag her into this. I surprise her with applause.
What a clever lady you are. Volga belongs here with her people. Even if she is an abomination, I smirk. You've thought it all out. But you got one problem. I tap my temple. I know how the rest of this plays, and it's all downhill. Dreamers die bad.
Mr. Horn? Ephraim? My people deserve a future without war. It cannot be done in my time, but in Volga's it may be. I need her. My people need her.
Her world is Freyhild on a hook. Osgard scheming and poisoning his way into halls of power. Valdir butchering women and dreaming of the war I ran from. Sefi was crueler from the start than Volga ever could be, and even she drowns in yellow death and deceit. Now we're adding barbarian enemies from the ink. Fuck that. This place would eat Volga like it's eating you. That girl might have your blood, but I'm her people. She deserves more than dying for yours. If you want her as your heir, it'll be over my dead fucking body.
Chapter 47. Lyria. They are sleeping. I fold the newest letter from Volga so that the light can catch the words. Written on a strip of her jumpsuit's legging, it is her longest yet. The penmanship is poor and untidy, the letters awkwardly cramped together. I smile to think of the large woman hunched over a bit of nail, trying to cram as much in as possible. Though my handwriting is better, I know fewer words than the thief, and puzzle over the longer ones. It's a right shame Kavix and I never got very far in our lessons. Felt safe in that big man's company. Him stooped over my cramped writing, then leaning back with a smile to praise it. I squint down at the letter. You are lucky to have had a father, even if he was not so kind all the time. I wish I had a father to tell me ghost stories of Golbak the Dark Creeper. It sounds like a legend I once heard in Hyperion from a deep space trader. Long ago, after the Dark Revolt, the Obsidians, who survived the Great Purge, went beyond the moons, and there they became less than men. In darkness, they learned to hunt other men. After hundreds of years, a king amongst them rose. They called him Volsung Fa, Volsung the Taker, eater of men and ships. He is said to be out there now, waiting for new ships to eat. They say he carries a chain of enemy skulls. It is a ridiculous story, but very scary. Ha ha. Your brother Dagon sounds much like Ephraim, very mean because he fears loss, so he makes himself alone. I like Angus better. Happy people make me happy, but there are so few of them. I hope they are safe on Mercury. If they are with the Reaper, they will likely come home heroes. It is good Angus showed you how to explore the vents. All should explore. I do not know why they make you girls wear dresses, though. Maybe to make it hurt more to explore. Who knows? Maybe they made red women weaker than red men on purpose. Ephraim says obsidian women are weaker but smarter than obsidian men. I think we are smarter than all men. Ha ha. Smiling and finding myself unable to decipher only about 20% of the words, I flip the strip of cloth over. Like you, I did not see the sun until I was grown, when they sent me from Luna to Earth. My world was small too. There were many doctors. Want to know something ridiculous about me? My body is backwards, my liver to the left, my heart to the right, not even close to center. I don't know why they did that. Maybe just to see if they could. I remember many needles, and they would watch us sleep, and sometimes hurt us if we did not obey. A dark woman would come and watch us play. She had a great skull ring and many beautiful dresses, and a necklace made of a snake. A snake! One day she gave me a toy ship. I would lie in my bed at night with that ship and dream of space. I thought one day I would sail it and be a pirate like in the stories. Not a bad pirate, but not a good one. Good is boring. I would be dreadful but fair, and would only steal from bad people. They deserve it, you know. I would not have a bird like Orion's Aquarii, but a gorilla. Have you ever seen a jadeback gorilla? My Jove, they are scary. Maybe when we leave here, we can be pirates together. You can have the sword, but only I get the gorilla. Ha ha. Tell me about the sovereign, if you do not mind. I have always wanted to meet her. Her soldiers were very frightening, but not cruel. That is the sign of a good ruler. Strength, but decency. Yes? Your friend, Volga. And I will have Manchurian steak, rare, with corn and greens when we escape. Your fresh fruit is boring. Had too much on earth. Berries are for pixies. She ends each letter the same. Your friend. It seemed a quirk at first, but read more desperately with each letter, as if she's pleading for me to end my letters the same. I won't. We ain't friends. We're both just desperate to not disappear without a trace. In the real world, she's a killer. I've seen her in action, all kitted up with hardware. She was made in a laboratory anyway. What the Hades do gold make in a laboratory with obsidians except weapons? Still, she did fail. They did drop her on Earth to haul freight. There I go again, trying to make excuses for her. It's damn hard not to. She's adorable, for a killing machine raised by a devious cur. I carefully tear a strip of cloth from my jumpsuit. The sleeves are already gone. Soon both legs will be too. I pick the scab on my finger and dab my nail into the wound. Then the light freezes in the middle of an indigo pattern. For the first time in months, the music stops. Light pours in from a hallway as the door opens. I stare like an old bat. This cell is mine now, my territory. Two terrifying greys in heavy combat gear emblazoned with a screaming Julii sun enter. Fuck, they look scary. Both are modified with metal facial implants connected to sockets on their thick necks. One's nose is as flat as my chest and pitted with some weird pattern like he caught the bad end of a chemical attack or something. Soul guards. Maybe it's not my cell after all. Then a woman joins them. If I weren't hanging from the ceiling by my own legless, sleeveless jumpsuit, I'd probably rush her all manic and get my skull split by one of those souls. This woman once stuck a needle in my chest, but she doesn't look like a devil. If anything, she's got the look of an old, tired owl. Brown, frizzy hair, lean and small compared with the greys, but athletic. She stands like a dancer. Her skin is boot leather, her eyes narrow and mean, and she has a nose you could shelter beneath in a downpour. Yet there's something off about her. She seems like she's in pain. Not emotional, pure and physical. The woman tidies her expensive silk leisure suit as if she was some high-born gold. Her only weapon is a slim silver pistol in a low-slung holster. I see you have adapted, she drawls. But adaptability is never something Reds have been accused of being short of. Intelligence, on the other hand. I say nothing. Pacified, too. Scurry down from there, you little monkey. We got business. I don't. Told Julii she'd go mad, she mutters under her breath to the soul guards. They don't seem to like her much at all. What business, I ask. Ignoring me, She bends down to riffle through the small stack of Volga's letters, which I've secured in the crease between the food tube and the floor. "Don't touch those," I snap. I must confess, it was interesting to watch. Transit voyages on warships can be tedious, you understand, even with HC being so full of drama. So thank you for the entertainment. She begins to read from one of the letters. My favourite time of day is the early morning, before it is really morning, but when it's not quite night. The world is very still, and if you watch closely, you can see it breathe as it wakes up.
Those are mine.
Take as keepers, darling. She begins to read again. I pull myself up to create some slack and untie the knot so I can fall to the floor. I manage to land on my feet. There. Now that's a predictable monkey. I extend a hand. She throws the letters at me and watches me as I collect them. Hard-headed, soft-hearted. Bad combination. That obsidian is one dangerous customer less.
I know.
No, you really don't. And the syndicate bounty on her. Julia is lucky I've a professional code. She whistles. Wonder what would have happened if you and the beast had to share the same cell and no food. How long before she gobbled up your scrawny little monkey legs?
2 days? 4?
She reflects on that a moment. Probably 4. Volga does like to pretend she's warm and cuddly, even to herself. I don't rush to Volga's defence. The brown is so odd. Her nails are painted a brilliant shade of orange. She wears 2 great diamond rings, and her tanned skin is etched with ornate white lines, almost like a blueprint. What kind of brown are you supposed to be? I ask, stuffing the letters into my jumpsuit.
Brown? She grins. I'm whatever my employer pays me to be, and I've never quite had anyone pay as well as Madame Barker.
Mercenary! I spit at her feet.
Hold her down, she tells the guards. I want to spit in her eye.
Do it yourself, scum, one of them says, a Martian from Apollonia by his accent. You're not our centurion.
Scum! Mercenary! She hisses in irritation. Why does no one abide the word freelancer?
I blink, and she's nose to nose with me. Her hand is around my throat.
Call me Fig.
My eyes open in surprise, and Fig spits a big, hot wad of spit right in the left one. She pushes me as I aim a knee at her cunny. Caught off balance, I trip over her foot behind my left heel and sprawl on my ass.
Bitch!
I fight to get up, but Fig steps back, activating the room's lights. She moves about the room with a speed that seems almost unnatural, tapping a pattern in the contorted shapes. As Fig touches each bit of the light, the room begins to sprout new fixtures. First, a sheet of flooring pulls back, and a bed with a cozy wooden frame rises from the floor. She touches a few more bits of the light, and a fire springs up. Then a spit of roasting meat, a table, and a cobbled stone on the floor. And the puzzle is solved. I had suspicions there was a code. The room then becomes lost in a Europan storm. All the walls are replaced by images of a roaring sea. Monsters move in the ocean. Waves crash at the windows. But in the midst of the storm, the fire crackles. A full kitchen of delights awaits. Floating flame globes drift over a case of weapons big enough to hunt prey bigger than men. And an image, just like the famous mural on the Senate ceiling, bleeds into the storm clouds above. A picture of Darrow and a glorious, comely Severo standing over a beheaded woman. Even I know it's Aja O'Grimace. Lionheart is off to the side, preening, and a stooped, ugly, but very tall man in pristine white armour, patterned with birds and a sun, looks sheepishly at the blood.
Didn't you realise it was a puzzle?
She's mocking me. Low intelligence quotient, I suppose. Fig examines me, less than impressed.
At first I thought you were on F's crew, but now...
She laughs at me.
Just can't understand how you made such a dent on the old boy. Maybe he's gone senile. Who knows? Quite a turn he's had of late, however. She sees my confusion. Don't you know? F's a regular hero with the Obsidians, a real blood brave. Fig snorts. He's arranged for your exchange, yours and the big lass. So move your ass. Did I mishear? My exchange. I'd pay half my salary to know why, but that man and I don't exactly get along any more. Strawberry lacuna, long, hot night in Adonis. The camel. She winces. Long story. The white is our intermediary, anyhow. But I'll tell you, something's got Seffi all hot and spicy. Her eyes go distant as she considers what it could be, but not in a human way. More like a hyperneedle on a silk loom pausing, then stuttering quickly back into motion. She snaps her fingers at the greys. Clean her up. The All Tribe's got a boat inbound. They don't move. Julie's orders, not mine. Do it. They grab me and haul me to the door. Where are we? I ask as they pull me into the hall. This some sort of prison barge. The greys laugh to each other. A prison barge, one cries. No, lass. Welcome to the JBS Pandora. They push me into the light. The room is huge. Not a prison block, but some sort of simulation training deck. Dozens of pilots and infantry queue for the simulators, which form a honeycomb along the crescent wall. Even I know the Pandora, a ship synonymous with